This is your Day X World War III update. Times like these, I wish I had some sort of shtick, like a cigar or some sort of handle. Days like today, when the price of gold continues to smash records day after day, you start to get worried. And unfortunately, I have a sneaking suspicion that I'll be talking about the price of gold breaking new records for the foreseeable future. The reason why this is so concerning is because gold is a barometer for social chaos. Regardless of whether or not you hold any gold or silver, it's still a useful metric to track, if only because it reflects a heightened degree of chaos, volatility, and instability. The higher the price of gold gets, the greater the likelihood of nuclear war. To put it bluntly, the greater the likelihood of civil war and financial collapse. All of these things are inversely correlated with the price of gold. So when gold is hurtling towards $2,600 an ounce, as it is, and the media is completely oblivious to this fact, because of course they don't want to spook the population and tell them what it really means, yet you know that big money, money that you can't even imagine, is flooding into the gold markets. We're talking about trillions. Okay, most people just think we've heard these terms thrown out there, trillions. But understand that the gold market's market cap has went up $5 trillion this year. $5 trillion this year. That's real money. And what's concerning to me is this most recent bump reflects, and predictably so, some geopolitical events that have been unfolding. Right now, in the next 24 hours, Joe Biden and Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister of the UK, are about to meet and discuss lifting restrictions on Ukraine to do deep strikes using NATO sophisticated cruise missile systems inside Moscow. Let me tell you why this is very concerning. It's very concerning for all the reasons that I've mentioned in my most previous videos that I would encourage you to go and check out. I'm not going to get into the Day X decapitation strike hypothesis here. But just keeping it 100 in terms of the most short-term likely outcomes of such an event and how it could definitely amount to a nuclear exchange. If Russia permits NATO to utilize these weapon systems, some of which can be nuclear tipped. If Russia permits that, then they have to assume, if they're being prudent, that NATO could potentially fire a nuclear weapon at them. If they allow NATO to fire these missiles into their country, and they don't respond to NATO, then NATO will only continue to push the boundaries more and more and more. You remember when Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, talked about how the F-16s were a nuclear-capable system, and this is what they were most concerned about. Well, we already know that the Dutch have approved the Ukrainians to utilize F-16s on Russian territory. Whether or not that's been greenlit by the United States yet, I guess we'll find out soon enough. But what this means is that as soon as Ukraine starts using these weapon systems in Russia, Russia must presume that this is either more data collection against their missile defense, looking for weaknesses in their system, which will, of course, give NATO an advantage should they decide at some point to do a decapitation strike. And additionally, of course, it's going to mean that they're going to be attriting their unconventional capabilities. Because as you start to chip away at Russia's conventional capabilities and their civilian infrastructure, even their military conventional infrastructure, it has negative repercussions on their ability to defend themselves in a strategic nuclear war. Remember what else is happening right now. The largest ever Russian naval exercise since the Cold War. A global naval exercise simulating an attack on all of Russia's borders at the same time, essentially preparing for world nuclear war. So it's not surprising then that Vladimir Putin came out with a very forthright statement today, as did Sergei Lavrov. Sergei Lavrov is somebody whose statements tend to be far more measured and reserved, as he's revered by everybody except the brainwashed West, of course, as a very statesman-like diplomat, one of the most well-respected everywhere else but here, because he uses the right language. He never uses inflammatory language. He never uses language that could be misconstrued as being contentious. He's always to the point, just like a lawyer, okay? Only he doesn't lie. Well, it appears as though he doesn't lie. Here's what he had to say today, and listen up, because this is very important. We have no doubt the decision to lift restrictions on the use of long-range weapons to attack the territory of the Russian Federation was taken long ago. Now, I don't know when they're measuring this. I don't know if he's measuring it in weeks, months, years. Of course, we've been telling you for 2 years that they're going to send everything. I've said this years ago when this war started, that they're going to send every single thing. Because right now, it really makes no sense. When you really think about it, it's kind of like, why did they release the iPhone before the iPad? Think about this. Why did they allow, or why are they contemplating allowing Ukraine to do deep strikes using NATO weapons and NATO operators, which are required to program these things, and they require U.S. satellites and all the rest? And the Russians aren't stupid. The Americans know the Russians know this. So why are they going to that extent first before putting troops into Western Ukraine? You know what I'm saying? So the less escalatory thing would be to put troops in, I think. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but it would seem, even under the guise of some, I don't know, euphemistic term to describe whatever coalitional force you throw in there, even private mercenaries, okay, would be far less escalatory than taking jabs at Russia proper. So the only thing I can think of then is that they really are pushing Russia to do something that is going to give them the license that they need to get the blank check for the military-industrial complex that will power them for decades to come. Anyways, more on that in a moment. We have no doubt that the decision to lift restrictions on the use of long-range weapons to attack the territory of the Russian Federation was taken long ago, and now they are trying to make it look prettier and more respectable in the public space. And when Lavrov was giving this speech, he was noticeably distressed, which again is not a Lavrov that you see. Now, maybe the guy just wants to retire, but he can't because this war continues to rage. But to his dismay, he knows that his words are going to be lost on the West, because despite his best efforts to keep this thing at the level of conventional fighting and proxy conflict, he knows that the worst is about to happen. And of course, all of this signaling happening during the NATO, the BRICS Security Summit, which is another shot across the bow, so to speak, against the BRICS alliance. He goes on to say, we understand perfectly well that the West has called this war against Russia an existential war. The goal is to inflict a strategic defeat on us. But once again, I would like to remind you that other great figures in history of international relations, see how he uses this language, but then hear what he says next, including Napoleon and Hitler, had the same goals. And it is not for nothing that many foreign politicians who remain reasonable periodically remind their more zealous colleagues that it is disastrous for them to forget these lessons of history. Now, if I was reading this and I didn't know who the author was, I would think that this was Dmitry Medvedev. And this is the new litmus test for Russian nuclear escalation, is when the most well-respected and reserved, measured, prudent, jurisprudent of all diplomats gets confused with Dmitry Medvedev, you know that we've arrived. Because this guy has tried every possible method of diplomacy that there is in order to de-escalate this thing, obviously falling short of removing troops from Ukrainian territory, which, of course, all the brainwashed idiots are going to say is the only way to end this conflict. And you got to be real dumb at this point in time. If all of those videos of guys getting stuffed in vans have been missed by you, just go and Google Ukrainians stuffed in vans on, well, you probably won't come up on Google. Just go and put that in Twitter and see what comes up. We are literally funding guys being stuffed in vans by guys with masks to be sent off to the front lines to die. For what? For what? So Ukraine can win? So what does that mean? It means it's going to go nuclear. I mean, this is why I think the only possible explanation for all of this, because we know that our leaders don't want to die. They don't want to have to emerge from their bunkers and do manual labor and be looking over their backs to see if somebody's going to get the jump on them. They don't want to do that either. So they must be thinking in their twisted logic that either, number one, they can do a decapitation strike and it is going to be limited in terms of Russia's ability to respond, which most of the experts say is absolute lunacy. It's definitely going to lead to a mutually assured destruction or near mad scenario. However, the problem with nuclear disarmament and nuclear non-proliferation is that there's less nukes. So actually, the risk of mad is not what it was in the 1970s when there was like 70,000 nukes. Now it's very survivable. And it's not, maybe not for everybody, especially not if you're near a place of interest. But what it means is that essentially you're going to have a situation where either the motive is a decapitation strike or they want Russia to just use a little bit of a nuke somewhere. So then they can say, oh, you see, now we got to bring back the draft. Now we got to give Lockheed Martin another $100 trillion gazillion. Those are the only two things I can reason as to why they're seriously considering this at this point. Unless they genuinely believe that the Russians want to nuke the planet and take over the world. Which, history doesn't bear that out. If anything, as Sergei Lavrov has said, people have tried to invade Russia and failed. They're not generally an expeditionary imperialist nation like the Anglo-Saxon Western nations have been. They simply aren't. You know, you're not going to find, you know, the Russians weren't partaking in this scramble for Africa, for instance, among many other scrambles throughout history. They got their own problems to deal with. So what I'm saying is we're being fed a line. And I think a lot of people realize it. And the question is, are they hoping for a limited nuclear war or a big one? Because nothing in the calculus of what they're doing indicates that there is a way out of this to victory in a conventional way, which is going to not go nuclear. In terms of what Putin had to say, this is what Putin had to say. Kiev is already striking Russia with drones and by other means, just not by high-precision systems, which are a completely different story, he adds. Ukraine is not capable of independently using Western long-range weapons by itself. For this, they need, as I indicated, intelligence. They need people who are trained on the ground to show them how to program these things. And they need to use the West satellites. Flight assignments can only be entered into these systems by NATO military personnel and not by Ukrainian military personnel. We are talking about whether NATO countries will decide to directly participate in the Ukrainian conflict. You see, Putin as a lawyer is incredibly litigious and he wants to make sure that it's abundantly clear where the line is. And when this war started, you'll notice the lines were very blurry, but it's increasingly becoming clear where exactly that red line is. There was a time when some people thought it was the mere deliverance of 30 Abrams tanks that might have pushed the Russian over the edge. Now we're realizing that their responses are far more refined, and it's going to take a lot more than that to provoke them. But there indeed is a certain threshold where it becomes so disadvantageous for them to allow NATO to continue to operate in the way that it's doing that they have no choice but to attack NATO. And the response is very likely going to be that. It could be a conventional attack on NATO. It could be, seeing it, you know, go from to a tactical nuclear strike, there would have to be a very important target. I think what's more likely, now that I think about it, is something demonstrative. A nuclear test. But if they strike NATO conventionally, then it's up to NATO to escalate. And we know that our leaders don't want a nuclear war. But what it will do is it will allow us to mobilize and go full-blown war economy. And then we can say, look at how restrained we are. We did not allow, you know, Russia to get the best of us, and we didn't use our nuclear weapons, but now we're going to empower the Ukrainians more. And the whole thing is just going to continue to escalate. That is exactly what they want. And the clock is ticking. We got about a month and a half left until this election goes down. And I think they're trying to do something before that period of time. And I think that's why the price of gold is going up. This significantly changes the essence and nature of the conflict. This will mean that NATO countries, the United States, and European countries are at war with Russia. Period. Point blank. This is the line. This is the line. Not because of the missiles themselves, but because of the precedent and of the potential for NATO to really start to defeat Russia's strategic deterrence, their missile defense, and just their critical infrastructure that they would leverage in order to fight a war against NATO. All Putin said was, Russia will make the appropriate decisions based on the threats that will be created. You know, this guy should write the YouTube terms of service because he would be very good at it. Now, in the Middle East, you'll also notice that the price of oil is going up. I believe it is the Theodore Roosevelt that is now departing the Middle East, or is it the other aircraft carrier? I can't remember. One of them is now departing the Middle East. And isn't it interesting that as that aircraft carrier made its way to the Middle East, the price of oil plummeted? And everybody was like, wait a minute, doesn't this mean war is imminent, myself included? And we're all learning as we go. And anybody who claims that they had the answers at the time, they certainly didn't. Trust me, nobody did. The only possible explanation is that some people thought that this lent itself to stability within the region. And now that they're pulling those forces back, presumably towards the Pacific or possibly back to the United States for servicing, indicates that their capability to defend that region is going to be diminished, which may in fact incentivize parties to that conflict to escalate further. Now, it could also mean that they are in fact preparing for a real war in the Middle East. It's been brought to my attention that General Soleimani, the guy who Trump assassinated back in 2019 before the world changed forever, well, he said once that it's not when there's aircraft carriers in the Middle East that you need to worry. It's when there isn't. And that is presumably because they would be easily targeted, sitting ducks, by a lot of the weaponry that Iran could bring to bear. Now, I'm not a naval expert. I'm not a military expert, so I don't know how true that actually is. I think in this conflict with Russia, we're starting to see that it's not easy to hit things accurately with missiles in a war zone, when there's especially a moving target, okay? So I'm not sure if I buy that argument. But nonetheless, oil is going back up once again, and it's also a sign of a weakening dollar, let's face it. In the run-up to the election, we also have to factor in which one of the bullshit candidates is going to win. Today, Trump, was encouraging people to go out and buy gold, because of course that's what somebody who is telling you the truth would do, right? Wrong. He was not even encouraging people to buy Bitcoin. He was encouraging people to buy this new shitcoin being promoted by his son. This is a guy who wants to, or the people around him, because I don't think Trump knows much about cryptocurrency, really. This is a guy who says Elon does rockets good. Rockets. My Trump impressions are terrible. We know that Trump probably doesn't know Bitcoin from a hole in the ground, so why is he promoting it? Well, they're promoting it because they want to take attention away from the gold market. That's where the real money, that's what the old money is buying, okay? They're buying gold. And in addition to that, when he's talking about creating a Bitcoin reserve, what do you think that's going to mean? Where is the U.S. going to get money from when it's in a constant deficit to buy Bitcoin? Well, they're going to have to print more money to buy Bitcoin. So it's going to be inflationary. So the whole thing is just absolutely asinine. There's another story here, an important one. I don't know why they would advertise this. This just shows you. I mean, if they're only studying this stuff now and they got it online for everybody to see, I don't know. Maybe that's a sign to Russia. Maybe this is a signal. There was a job posting on the U.S. Department of Defense website for services for modeling the effects of nuclear weapons on agricultural systems. They want to test what sort of impacts agricultural systems, how they're going to be impacted by a nuclear war. I'll read you the job description. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Engineer Research, and Developmental Center intends to issue an award on a... Okay, we're not going to read this part. Blah, 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 blah. For the research and development of for active research programs that focus on modeling impacts on the environment and the impacts of nuclear weapons on farm systems that optimizes AgriShock, a code suite for modeling the effects of nuclear weapons on agricultural systems. Now, the question is, we're not even to the point yet. I mean, they updated the nuclear doctrine. They're going to be allocating more nuclear funding. But again, this seems like putting the cart before the horse, because shouldn't you have modernized your nuclear forces before you start thinking about these things? Or is this just signaling to the other side that, hey, we're thinking about nuclear weapons too, in a very sort of discreet way? Because, of course, Russia today, the media agency, was the one who initially brought this up, who ran this story. The objective of this project is to build upon previous research efforts to develop and optimize AgriShock, a code suite for modeling the effects of nuclear weapons on agricultural systems, which of course means they're prepping for nuclear war on some scale. The minimum needs of this contract are that the contractor provide all personnel, equipment, facilities, supervision, and other items necessary to conduct studies that demonstrate modeling of nuclear warfare on a global scale that would lead to destruction of the agricultural systems, such as farms. The contractor must be able to do a bunch of computer-related stuff, utilize the software, AgriShock software, etc., etc. Either way, that's not the kind of headline you want to see when you know that the United States and the UK are ready to authorize deep strikes into the United States, and the Russians have basically said that that would be a declaration of war. What it does mean is that they think they have enough time left to do studies, okay? So how long does it take to do this kind of research? I presume quite a while, but if it's computer-based research, maybe not as long as some people might think. But it shows that they are leveraging artificial intelligence in order to create these models of how it's all going to go down. And I would venture to say that their modeling now must be way better than it was back when they were promoting that phony baloney nuclear winter hypothesis. If you haven't seen our video that debunks nuclear winter, you should go and watch it, because nobody knows exactly what's going to happen after a global nuclear war. But what if the effects weren't as bad as we're being told? And you might think that that's a good thing. It's a good thing, but then it prevents the mutually assured destruction deterrence component. That idea that nobody would initiate a nuclear war because they know it would mean the end of the world, or at least the end of civilization as we know it. Well, what if that's not true entirely? No matter how you slice it, a nuclear war is going to lead to a giga-death scenario entailing the deaths of at least a billion people. And that's just in the likely in the first few days. In the weeks and months thereafter, you could see the deaths of many more billion, who of course are going to have to rely on the power grid. And when that power grid can no longer function and there's no longer supplies and gasoline being brought into the city, and the hospitals are no longer functioning and there's no longer antibiotics and medication and clean drinking water and flush toilets and heating in the wintertime, that's when a lot of people are going to die. U.S. Navy SEAL unit that killed Osama bin Laden trains for a Chinese invasion of Taiwan. I've heard rumors that some people are saying that the Chinese invasion of Taiwan could happen this month. That would be very out of character for the Chinese, especially on the brink of a U.S. election. But we are going to see some very interesting days ahead. I have a feeling that every day up until the election is going to seem like a week in terms of the news cycle. So buckle up and prepare now. Don't wait. Don't wait to prepare, because if it's not going to be civil unrest in the U.S., it is going to be a massive war blowing up around the world, or economic collapse or calamity. Just because the election ends, even if the Bidens and the Kamalas lose, that only makes the next few months until Trump takes office even more tense. When you have a lame duck in office and they got nothing left to lose, that's really the most dangerous time, I would say. I'm almost thinking that in the short term, if Biden or Team Biden, Kamala, Obama win, then you're going to see probably this thing stretched out, in that there's not going to be this need for imminent escalation. I know that seems counterintuitive because they're the ones who are pushing for the war, at least on the surface anyways. We know that Lindsey Graham, one of the most hardline war hawks out there, is a proponent of the Trump platform. So, but I do think that if the Kamala administration wins, then they think that they're going to get more time. They can have more time, so they don't have to act in such a hasty manner, which is going to potentially lead to unexpected outcomes. Guys, go prepare. CanadianPreparedness.com or your local dollar store before it goes belly up, because apparently the dollar stores aren't even doing good. That's how hard people are doing right now. But just stay focused. Try to not take anything for granted right now, and just try to maximize to the fullest of your capabilities every single day, especially up until November 5th. Thanks for watching, folks. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe. Canadian Prepper out.